This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Waking up like you do, and good morning to you. This is Thursday, right? And, you know, I have to check these basic facts. Like, sometimes on the way to the studio, I'm like, okay, I put my pants on, right? And I double check, and almost every time I have, in fact, put my pants on. So that's good. I'm here with Nicole, who is my social media producer for Trivial Thursdays. And good morning, Nicole. Thank you for your your efforts to help spread the Trivial Thursdays word on social media.
Of course.
It seems like a natural match, right? I mean, I feel like what we're doing here just makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, because radio is, you know, radio waves, they float invisibly through the air. But you, dear listener, can interact with us by way of social media on Facebook at the Trivial Thursdays on WRFL.page. Yeah. If you have questions for guests too, you can pose them there. You have to pose. You have to take a picture of yourself posing the question. And then on Twitter too, at Trivial Thursday with no S on the end. So Nicole's the one that does all that magic, which is great, and kind of hypes up the trivia there. So we were noting that in 1955, as we said, Fats Domino released "Ain't That a Shame." Although there's some, I don't know, vague confusion there. I'm not really sure. Did you say, is it like Wikipedia said something different? It says Wiki 17th. What is today anyway?
The 14th.
The 14th.
Yes.
Yeah. Nicole also has helped me by giving me coffee since I let mine is sitting on the countertop at home, like just piping hot in a thermos, waiting to be carried out the door.
Waiting to be drank.
That's right. And that's where it's apparently going to stay for the show. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to visit with Natalie Baxter. She is going to be here, the Kentucky native, Lexington native even. I can't remember. We'll revisit with her about that. But I think so. And Natalie lives in Brooklyn these days and pursues a variety of endeavors in filmmaking and art. We talked to her by phone not too long ago. She's going to be here. She's here, and she's going to be here to for the closing reception for her show called OK 47, which is at Institute 193. Because she's the one with the stuffed guns. She follows the news and follows the news about mass shootings and stuff and makes these plush replicas, like pillow guns. She calls them warm guns that are replicas of guns that are popular. It's horrible to say popular to use in mass shootings. And so those are on display downtown. She's also a filmmaker and does a variety of stuff. So Natalie will be in here in just a little bit. And then a little later on in the show, we're going to talk to our buddy Shane Tedder, who's always an enormous champion of helping bikers get a lane on the roads downtown and just helping sort of commuter traffic and bikers, bicyclists in this case, we'll say, work together and share the road. And then after that, in the second hour of the show, Sean Gannon's going to be here of Soulful Space. And we're getting a return visit from Maggie Lander, who I don't know if, Nicole, I don't think you were here the last time she performed. She'll do a song or two in the studio. Maggie is a great singer.
I love live music.
Yeah, so Maggie's coming in. She'll play. All these great and wonderful things happening. In addition to that, historically, you know, oh wait, this is my favorite bit of trivia here, Nicole. We're in 1999, Prince announced that he intended to re-record the entire catalog of his music and re-release it.
Yeah, Yeah, I know.
That is such a Prince thing to do. Really? Or at least say. I don't know.
I wonder if he actually did it.
Or will do it.
Still.
Keep in mind, Sufjan Stevens, who's considerably less famous than Prince, said that he was going to record it. He recorded the record called Michigan and then one called Illinois. And he said he was going to record an album for every single state. Those are the only two that he did. He has released about 7 albums since then, but none
they
of them
all different
are,
states.
None of them. Not one. Not one is a different state. So anyway, that's what happens, I guess. Now, I cut in before. We'll play some more music here. I'm still thrilled about this new record by Kiki and the Vets, which is fronted by Lexington native Keaton Butler. They have a little EP on Bandcamp called Over the Weather. And, man, it's smoking bluesy, so check it out. Minor Mishap Marching Band there from their self-titled album. The hosts, the Austin hosts of the Austin, Texas yearly community street band, they call them, festival that Lexington's own March Madness Marching Band has attended about 5 years worth of. So, let's see. This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. It's about 25 until 8 in the morning. Right around the corner, we're going to visit with Lexington native artist Natalie Baxter and hear about her exhibit that's downtown called OK47. That's just around the corner. Right now, I'm here taking a look at some of the historical trivia for the day. If it's your birthday, by the way, happy birthday. You share your birthday with lots and lots of people, right? Let's see. It's Inez Andrews, who was a singer-songwriter in the Caravans a long, long time ago. It's Richie Blackmore's birthday, who was in Deep Purple and Rainbow. One of the great, you know, like, he was like an early, you know, practitioner of hair metal before it was really hair metal. Let's see, who else's birthday is it? It's, let's see, the bass player from Jane's Addiction and Porno for Pyros, Martin Lenoble. And most importantly, it's Lita's birthday, who is an American wrestler and singer. My social media producer Nicole and I both find this to be particularly charming somehow. Now, Lita is listed as being associated with the Luchagors. I know Lucha Libre is the Mexican name for the kind of wrestling where they wear those crazy cool masks. So I assume that the Luchagor is somehow, you know, that the name is somehow some sort of play off of that, I guess. I don't know. Let's see. What was your what did you see here, Nicole, that you found to be particularly fascinating in today's trivia, since you're the one that looks at it or has looked at it today? We saw there was the thing about Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, the Prince thing made me giggle a lot.
What about in 1999, Tammy Wynette's body was exhumed in an autopsy performed in Nashville at the request of her husband, George Ritchie?
I wonder what the discovery was.
I don't know. I can't imagine. Or if anything, right?
Oh, and then in New Jersey, you said that the Bruce Springsteen.
Well, I passed over it. Didn't finish.
They wanted to make Born to Run their official state song.
Right. Which I guess happened. I don't know. Did it? Is that the state song of New Jersey?
I have no idea.
I mean, you know, they have a better one. I don't think they could have a better one. If you could have Born to Run be your state song, it's not a bad idea, I don't think, as these things go. Let's see. You know, it's no My Old Kentucky Home, but.
Very true.
I don't know. Let's see. I'm happy to have Natalie Baxter here. Hi, Natalie. How you doing?
Hi. What's up?
Well, you know, we're just celebrating the marvel and miracle of radio around here these
fun
days
down here
in the morning. Yeah, welcome to the bunker. I think I'm trying to get it renamed the bunker down here. This is because we're in the basement of the
White Hall
classroom building. Thank you. Did you go to school here?
I went to grad school here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I worked in the Patterson office tower.
Yeah. Store. Very exciting. You can see storms coming from really far away up there.
I saw a lot of storms.
Yeah. It's good. It's good for a photographer, which you happen to be.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I am.
Sometimes, right? You've done lots of stuff. You are, I was trying to remember, Lexington native, right? Mm-hmm. Kentucky native for sure. Lexington. You grew up here. Yeah. And have pursued in your life a variety of aspects of art and media and maybe even journalism.
I've always been interested in art, and then I got into filmmaking and video stuff in college, and then a little bit after college, and then while in grad school here, did a lot of video work and photography work, and then now I'm making stuffed pillow guns.
And so, like we all do.
A natural progression.
No, it is worth noting. So you've had this exhibit up in town here. Mm-hmm. You live in Brooklyn right now, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah. But downtown at Institute 193 for the last month or so, I guess.
Yeah.
Has been your exhibit, which is it called OK-47?
Yep.
OK-47. Which is super clever.
That was, my dad came up with that.
Is that right?
He's very good at naming.
God, that's good.
Naming the guns.
No, that's so good. So the gist of it, not to just dive right into that, because I'm curious about how it fits into, I don't know, just kind of all the different things you do. But but it's closing today or tomorrow. I can't remember.
So Saturday from 6 to 8 is the closing reception. And then it'll be up until, I believe, April 22nd. I can double check that. A couple more weeks.
And then, good, okay, so people can, and the great thing about this, by the way, is this is sort of true for anything at Institute 193, because it's so tiny, but it presents very well from the window, if you will. You can walk by and be like, whoa, look at that. Yeah. And in this case, what we're talking about are, and I'll just be as naive as possible, big, cute, stuffed replicas of assault weapons. And assorted guns in bright colors, and they're plush guns.
Yeah, there are lots of different, a variety of fabrics, a lot of florals, a lot of brights, colors.
And these are things you make these totally yourself.
Yes, yes.
So sitting with the sewing machine or needle and thread or whatever.
Yeah, well, the first 100, so majority of the ones that are in that show are all hand done. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of rediscovered the sewing machine and was like, whoa. This could be done a lot faster.
I was gonna push back and say, well, it doesn't count if you use a sewing machine. I don't know. You're still sitting at the sewing machine.
Right.
I guess if you use a chainsaw versus a handsaw, to me, you're still sawing.
Yeah. It's mostly when do I have time to sit at a sewing machine versus hand sewing, you can take it with you anywhere. So
that's a good point.
A lot of it was done on the subway. So it's like I have a long commute to work, so I would just sew on the subway.
And New York is sort of famous for people averting their eyes on the subway. Yeah. But if anybody was getting stared at, it might have been you.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of other crazy people doing something a lot crazier than sewing. But sometimes people would ask me. A majority of older people would be like, what are you making? Or old ladies. Or a lot of Asian people, there's a lot of that tradition of sewing is in maybe a Chinese background. So a lot of Asian women and Asian men would be like, what are you making? And sometimes I'd be like, oh, a pillow, or a quilt, or it'd be like an AK-47. Sometimes they would be like, okay, and stop talking to me, or they'd be like, wait, tell me more.
Well, I mean, it's wildly provocative. These we call them worm guns, is that right?
Yeah, worm gun.
Yeah. We can rehash a little bit about what we talked about by phone, because I mean, it is the kind of thing where when I saw them, and I feel like a lot of people, maybe who are fond of art and just kind of, I don't know, just like to sort of study and consider art, when I first saw them, I was like, oh my God, of course. But it was something I'd never seen before. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like you hatched one of those kind of great, rather original art ideas, kind of, mm-hmm. by taking these weapons of violence and turning them into, I don't know, these. What's the rationale in your mind behind turning these weapons of violence into these cuddly pillowy sort of things? They're not. I mean, they're art. They hang on the wall.
Right. But. So, as you know, the you know, gun debate, gun violence, lots of like mass shootings have been very prevalent in the news over the past, I guess, like 10 years or like it's kind forever.
It's kind of the American way. It's starting to look like.
Exactly. So, I started thinking about it more, I guess, when I was in New York and I came back to Kentucky and saw a wall of these guns on a friend's wall. And I was like, oh, wow, you would, A, like, never see that in New York, and B, like...
In this case, real guns.
Yeah, real guns. And so, like, you never see that in New York. And then, like, I was doing sewing stuff at the time. My grandmother taught me how to quilt when I was younger. She's from Kentucky. And I was like, oh, what would, like, a stuffed pillow gun look like, and like a wall of stuffed pillow guns. So then I just kept doing it, and it kind of evolved into dealing with issues of gender and masculinity in gun culture. We can talk about that later if you're, or you can go talk about it now.
No, you're welcome to. Okay. I mean, there's a droopy floppy quality too.
Yes, exactly.
There's occasionally for lack of a better word, because there isn't one, one might call flaccid quality to some of the guns.
Yep. So I like, there's not a study that's about this masculinity and gun culture per se, you know,
because
like,
I always thought it was Corvettes, but apparently
this woman wrote this great article that was like, America's gun problem has everything to do with America's masculinity problem.
Okay.
And that when I read that, I was like, yes, this is like what I've been trying to figure out in this project. So I'm like taking this very traditional act of sewing, this very feminine act of sewing, and turning it and like creating these very like hard kind of traditionally symbols of masculinity, these guns, and then making them very like droopy and like soft and like floral fabrics, and looking at kind of how this role of masculinity plays into gun culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a whole thing of like, so, you know, like gender is morphing in this very public way in America. Even in the past year, you know, we saw same-sex marriage was legalized. We saw like the Caitlyn Jenner, you know, like that was like a very public way. So like what I'm trying to figure out, but there's not like really a study to say yes or no, is that like men, this certain kind of masculine man is holding on to this like need to protect and these guns as a way of preserving this like masculinity. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And I was thinking as you were saying that it's easy to kind of demonize it in some ways, but I think that it's possible that for some men, I don't know, they don't, on a certain level, masculinity is undergoing this transformation that puts a lot of dudes in a really uncomfortable position. They sort of don't, that's like what they know how to do.
Yeah.
And they're maybe trying to figure out it's all I know how to do, you know, so like it's easy to sort of demonize it in some ways. But it's also like a lot of aspects of masculinity are becoming, I suppose, obsolete in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, very difficult transition for some people.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting intersection that you've got here. With.
And then there's also the whole, you know, gun violence and all these mass shootings that have happened. So a lot of the guns, I would kind of do some research and see what people were using, what kinds of guns, and model some of these warm guns after these weapons that are being used in America.
Right.
Oftentimes in this very violent way.
Now, have you displayed these elsewhere?
Yeah, they've been in some group shows in Brooklyn and Manhattan and where else?
What are some of the more surprising responses that you've gotten to these? when I first saw them and we exchanged a few emails, mm-hmm. I was almost powerless not to kind of privately kind of want one mm-hmm. as you know, to look at it as kind of an analog for a stuffed toy, yeah. basically. And I'm like, you know, it's not like my kid has toy guns to play with.
Right.
But I'm like, wow, my friend is an artist and she makes these stuffed guns and I'd kind of maybe like to have, no, I don't want one. But anyway, yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
I could imagine some people being like, that's so cute, honey. Can I get five of those?
Exactly. Some people are like, oh, my husband shoots. I want to get one for him. Or like, oh, I want to get one for my kid. But like, I try to keep them in this art context because they are very toy-like. Yeah. You know, they're very, they could be used as, you know, like in a kid's bedroom, but that's not what they're intended for. So I've been cautious to keep them in this kind of art context. And
so you're not trying to make like this toy empire of
right,
stuffed guns.
Exactly, because a lot of times
Natalie
people
Baxter's
will be like, yeah, guns. People will be like, you can mass produce them and sell them and you can make so much money. I'm like, no, that's not what I want to do. I mean, money would be nice, I guess. But.
I know, it's kind of like, it's a fascinating, you know, in our capitalist society, yeah. It's a fascinating head scratcher because you're like, oh God, that's, I probably could.
But they would become something completely different.
Right. But you have gotten some great press about this, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I've been fortunate.
Did you have it, I always wonder, I mean, along the lines of, you know, we say, wait, there's a great idea. But, you know, to take it back to its core value, I mean, mm-hmm. when this started to dawn on you, did you kind of think, I mean, as an artist, did you kind of think, this is good. I'm sort of onto something here.
Well, in the beginning, I was like, it did feel that way, but I was like, I just got to keep making them right. and see what happens. So when I started like December 2014, and then I knew there was something there, but I didn't quite know what it was, so I just kept making them. Mm-hmm. Because it was also like a need that's really nice to like produce things, you know, like, I'm sure you're one of those people, too, where it's like you just have to make something. So it was filling that void for me of, like, needing to make something. So I just kept making them. And then at one point I was like, wow, I have, like, 100 guns, and I have this, like, kind of small apartment.
I was going to say, you live in New York,
what
right?
am I doing? So, you know, there's been moments where I was like, am I just going to have to, like, give all these away to somebody because I'm not going to know what to do with them? But then, unfortunately, the like mass shootings kept happening and the, you know, political debate has been very gun centered or was at the time. So then like people started being like, wait, I think that I want to write about this. And then, you know, that sort of helped people know about the project and probably what helped get it at Institute 193. I think Kat, the gallery director, read one of the articles and then mm-hmm. was like, oh, hey. And then now, like, there was an article that came out a couple days ago in Hyperallergic, and since then, people have been like, oh, hey, let's do, where are you based? Like, can I show you some of your stuff in our gallery? So that's good. So press is always good. So, because it aligns with lots of things that are going on in our culture mm-hmm. is what makes it really relevant.
Natalie Baxter is here, the Kentucky native, currently living in Brooklyn. And the artist whose project called OK47 is on display downtown at Institute 193. There is, did you say closing reception?
Closing reception, yeah, from 6 to 8 on Saturday, mm-hmm. April 16th.
Okay.
This Saturday.
Right. It's going to be up for a while longer after that, mm-hmm. though. Let's take a little musical break here because, of course, I have to play the Breeders version of the Beatles' Happiness is a Warm Gun.
Of course.
And we will be back. Happiness is a Warm Gun from the Breeders' first album, Pod. And I'm here with Natalie Baxter. Happy to be visiting with Natalie. Natalie, you're visiting a little bit here. You've been living in Brooklyn for a few years, right?
Yeah, like 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm. And so let's see. Like we said before, you grew up here in Lexington mm-hmm. and have pursued a variety of avenues of art in your life.
Mm-hmm.
I first became aware of you because we both did that the little film contest that
Lexington Doers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yours just smoked everybody's. But I could tell partially because you had an unfair advantage, I think, because he had maybe been at Apple Shop at that point. I'm not sure, but
not yet. But I'll remember.
That was just natural raw talent then. It was like a yours was a short little documentary about making sorghum molasses, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah, in Kingdom Come Creek.
Yeah, and I can't remember, were the people in that were those relatives of yours?
Yes,
in
that guy that was making the sorghum was. Comus Eisen, who is, I think it's my grandmother's cousin,
yeah.
I believe. I can fact check that.
So, like, the, that was an instance of basically visual storytelling that, mm-hmm. that I wonder if you have continued to pursue that in other avenues
yeah,
in your life.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Well, I got into filmmaking when I was in college and went to Jamaica. And a guy had been traveling down to Jamaica for 30-some years and was like, I really want somebody to document these people's stories in Trenchtown, this neighborhood mm-hmm. where Bob Marley's from.
Yeah.
And so I went down and kind of learned how to make documentary films while there, which was really fun.
Wow.
And then was thought about Eastern Kentucky, where my mom's from, and my grandmother lived at the time. And I was like, there's some really great stories there that could be told. So that's when I made the Kingdom Come Creek stir off video that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then did a lot more documentary work there based on women telling stories of their connection to Eastern Kentucky. It's called Home Place. And from like a 5-year-old girl to an 85-year-old woman, my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So all kind of talking about their connection to their place, their home place. So little like portrait vignettes, video portrait vignettes. That was my thesis project for graduate school at UK.
Mm-hmm. And so your graduate degree, is it fine arts or
whatever? MFA, yeah, MFA. Master of Fine Arts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see. And so you picked up and moved to Brooklyn
mm-hmm.
just to kind of pursue your dreams or what have
yeah,
you.
Yeah, just to... Yeah. Live in the big city.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started teaching at a film school there. I still teach there. I teach a video editing class.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach a website portfolio building course. So they do some Photoshop, some website building, some making reels. And then I also am an associate producer for CBS.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to make... We do 4 30-minute shows a year.
What does it mean to be an associate producer for CBS? What does that mean that you do?
So I work in this really small department of CBS that's called CBS Religion and Culture.
Mm-hmm.
And every major network used to have a religion unit back in the day, but CBS is the only one that's still held on to theirs. So we used to do like 60 shows a year. Now we do 4 30-minute shows, all on a variety of topics pertaining to different faith communities or mm-hmm. issues in going on in religion today. So what it means to be an associate producer is like a little bit of everything. So you'll like find or help find people that you want to interview for the show and then call them and figure out the shoots and plan the shoots and go on the shoots and, you know, kind of like a little bit of organizing, a little bit of working with the editor and finding mm-hmm. footage and getting her whatever she needs. It's fun.
Right. I was going to say, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really
like
fun.
Do all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. So people, if people want to, people who want to check out the exhibit here, mm-hmm. what happens with the Warm Guns after this, by the way? Anything else lined up or?
Oh.
Is that still kind of like chugging along?
Yes,
like,
it is.
How do you have a feeling for the kind of, longevity of something like this,
yeah,
I guess.
I know. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, what do you do if something kind of has feet or has wings, as they say, and something yeah. starts really blowing up?
I guess what you do, or this is what I'm going to do. I guess if people are still interested in it, then I'll keep making them. And if I get sick of making them, then I'll just stop.
Right.
But I'm going to have a show in Vienna. There's a group show that a friend of mine's curated.
Vienna, Kentucky, right?
No. Austria.
Fantastic.
And then some of them are going to this place upstate that's really great. It's called Wasaic.
Okay.
I'm actually doing an artist residency there in July, so I get to be there for the whole month of July. It's a really teeny town with, like, you know, a swimming hole, one bar, and this artist residency program. And so they took over this old mill, like a giant 7-story mill, and they have a huge art exhibit there in the first weekend of August. So it's like art, music, film, dance. So a lot of the guns will be there in for the whole summer, actually.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope that all of this just keeps, I was going to say blowing up for you, but that somehow seems inappropriate.
Yeah.
And I hope that you'll continue to incorporate your Kentucky roots and all the wonderful things that you do.
Yeah. Thanks, Mick.
And do come back and visit
any
old time. Natalie Baxter here. If you want to see Natalie's show that's up downtown at Institute 193 called OK47, it's up for, we think, a couple more weeks.
Yeah,
is that right?
I think April 22nd.
Yeah. And there's more information on the Trivial Thursdays on WRFL Facebook page. And
but yeah, come out this Saturday.
And, yeah, if you want to come visit.
6 to 8. I'm going to give a little short talk.
Yeah, and you can interact with Natalie. She won't sell you guns for your kids. Plush guns, not happening. Anyway, thanks again, Natalie.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
This is Trivial Thursdays, and we are going to take a short break here. And find some wonderful, appropriate music. Oh, I know. Here's something real nice. Today, the birthday of one of the founding, lesser-known figures of, what came to be known kind of as the Seattle sound, which was, let me just say, very, very popular with the RFL types. Back before it broke real big with, of course, because, you know, how many college radio DJs it takes to screw in a light bulb, by the way?
How many?
It's a really obscure number. You've probably never heard of it. anyway, it's Barrett Martin's birthday, who was born in 1967, and he was the drummer for the Screaming Trees and for Skin Yard, both fantastic bands that... from Seattle that played in Lexington a number of times back in the day, and paving the way for, you know, kind of the bigger names that came along later.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
I know you want to talk about Gary Numan for just a minute, because who doesn't? Gary Numan there with Metal from the Pleasure Principle album. And fascinatingly enough, in today's trivia, Gary Numan in 1980 released the Touring Principle, a 45-minute concert video, the first commercially available home rock video. He was the first guy to make, like, something that was like a rock and roll thing that was on video cassette that got sold to people. And then, as my social media producer Nicole pointed out, in 1956 in Chicago, on this day, videotape was first demonstrated. So there you go. I mean, whoa. I hope everyone was sitting down for all that. That's all I can say. This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. It's 15 after 8 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in. And thanks to Natalie Baxter for coming in, talking about OK47. I never tire of saying OK47 because I think it's such a great name. That's the exhibit that she's got down at Institute 193 that's going on for the next couple weeks, in case you want to check it out. Plush assault rifles and whatnot. There's photos and event sort of related stuff on the Trivial Thursdays Facebook page. Although you could also do a search on the internets for Natalie Baxter and OK47. I'm pretty sure you can click the I'm feeling lucky button on that. Just guessing there. I don't know if anybody ever plays with that. I never do, but I still feel a certain measure of pride when the thing that I'm looking for comes up number one, you know. I'm here with Shane Tedder. Shane, how's it going?
Good morning, Nick. It's going great.
Excellent. Let's see. So, what have you been doing, my friend? We bump into each other on occasion.
Oh man.
Maybe roll past each other, yeah. Maybe on bikes on occasion. I know that's your preferred mode of transportation.
Absolutely. When I'm not, yeah.
We're coming into prime bike riding season, which I know you are not limited by. Let me ask you this. Let's back up. Did you go on the Frozen Chosen ride this year?
I did.
Did you?
I did.
Okay. I think I've wimped out maybe 1 or 2 years. Like, really, I've only ever been on it once. Yeah. But
it was relatively mild this year.
And is that right?
We've had enough hard winter. So the Frozen Chosen is it started 7 or 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
With a group of crazies that said, if we can ride on the coldest night of the year, then we could ride any day of the year. And just kind of making fun of that and living by the adage that there's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing.
Right. And all of this in the service of bikes as a quintessential mode of transportation.
Bona fide.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's, now among this crew, there's maybe just a little bit of macho in there,
just a little bit.
But having been said, there's a wide assortment of people that do this ride. I did it, it was brutally cold, and there were probably 70 people. I don't know, maybe.
And there was inappropriate clothing.
Frosted over visor.
I mean, there were enough people who thought it was a cool thing that there was definitely inappropriate clothing for. I mean, we've been out in negative 25 wind chills.
Yeah.
And you really need technical garments right. At that point, to save skin and limb.
But this year, you said, was kind of mild.
Yeah, I think it was in the teens, maybe. Wind chills might have been single digits.
Right.
Which feels, when you've ridden negative 25 and you kind of put on the same gear as you would for that ride, because it's the Frozen Chosen, you want to kind of look like you're going to Antarctica. the teens feel warm, and you're, taking off layers and sweating. And so, good times.
And this is something anybody can, there's like a Facebook group for this, and anyone can join.
Yeah. Yeah, and we never know the date until a couple days before because you're waiting to see whether or not it really is going to be the coldest day of the year.
Yeah, it's sort of a weather prediction.
So you join the event, and then the date changes, but you keep the event updates. Tim Buckingham does a great job of kind of riding herd over setting the actual date and doing the communication on it.
And there's enough people along who kind of know what they're doing that I'll say as a complete neophyte that I went, and there's always some of you cats who are kind of like I don't know what you call it, but kind of being in the middle of an intersection.
Lifeguarding.
Thank you.
Yeah. And on certain cold days, I mean, you also watch before the ride, and you tell people when you're advertising the ride, look, it's going to be the type of temperatures we're talking about, exposed skin, frostbites in a few minutes, so just be prepared. But yeah, then shepherding the ride along is a lot of fun,
right.
Too.
And so I could turn this into a joke by saying, Frozen Chosen should have been like last week or something, right?
It's weird how relativity works. You have a few days at 70 and 32, you feel like, I can't feel my hands.
But for years now, you've been involved in a variety of aspects of, can we say, promoting bike culture in there's probably a better, because there's bike culture is really kind of ascendant in Lexington in some ways.
Yeah, and divergent. I mean, there's a lot of different aspects of bike culture in Lexington. I fancy myself as promoting bikes as a mode of transportation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And definitely think that it's the most fun way to get around. And we've done a lot of just fun culture and social building events. But, I work here in UK, and I wear a bunch of different hats for UK, and one of the hats I wear is a bike helmet. And so I serve on the bike advisory committee and kind of help with infrastructure development here and a lot of partnerships with the city and state on the roads surrounding campus.
Mm-hmm. And for what it's worth, and I've put this feather in your cap before, but I'm going to do it again. You were involved in kind of reversing a pretty egregious kind of policy decision, and it's been years ago now. Yeah. I guess more, maybe, I don't know how, I'm not sure how long, but there was a point at which there was some unfortunate decision making that led to bikes being banned on the campus of UK.
Yep. And there were these, I've always referred to them as the thou shalt not bike
right.
emblems painted all over campus sidewalks. Yeah, that was There was an administrator who got plowed by a cyclist on a sidewalk, and the reactionary thing was to set a policy for the lowest common denominator and put out all these thou shalt not bike emblems. And we began actively removing them in 2009, and I think 2 years ago we found like one that was kind of hidden on a sidewalk over behind Fine Arts. And at that point, it was great. It was like there were bounty hunters out there. There were people that would call me and be like, I found another one. And then, you know, we'd send out a crew with a sandblaster and remove it and get it on. And we replaced them with some emblems that just said shared sidewalks, bikes yield to pedestrians. So a little bit more of promoting the positive on the routes that we thought were good for cyclists and then just leaving the thou shalt not bike stuff to other authoritarian regimes.
Now, you guys have some, there's coming up, it's sort of not just, I know UK Bike Week is coming up, right?
We're in the middle of it.
Okay. And then beyond that, UK Bike Week also, does it kind of jibe somewhat with, this is a time for, springtime is kind of a time for celebrating bicycling, maybe across the country? I'm not
sure. Yeah, May is National Bike Month.
Okay.
And so there'll be a ton going on in Lexington for bikes in May, and BikeLexington.com is the one-stop shop for that.
Yeah.
And they've got a great Facebook page as well. So if, I don't know if you just want to link to that, but
absolutely.
But because most of our students are gone by the end of the first week in May,
Okay.
The first week in May is finals week. So it's kind of a hectic time to try and get anybody to do anything. We've pushed a celebration of bikes on campus back to this week in April. Mm-hmm. So this is Bike Week. We've had some great events. Yesterday was Bike to Campus Day, so we were just kind of celebrating the fact that folks were commuting. We were doing bike-powered smoothies and safety checks, Wildcat wheels.
The bike-powered smoothie machine.
It lives.
It lives.
It actually got reincarnated. I bought a...
It abides.
It abides. It has a Vitamix blender on it, so it definitely abides.
Wow. Wait. But, it's a people-powered Vitamix blender? Because that seems like that would take a lot of wattage.
No, it does not. It's pretty amazing. For those of you who experienced Berry Peddlers back in the day,
right,
which was a farmer's market-based business that did bike-powered local fruit smoothies, those were hand-built based on a design that I picked up in Guatemala, and it was a great design, but it was kind of appropriate technology, right? We were building them in the highlands of Guatemala. There wasn't a whole lot of great steel equipment to work with there, so... I bought one from a company called Rock the Bike a few years ago for the university, and it's the Cadillac. It's amazing.
What makes it such an upgrade? Speeds and stuff or what?
Yeah, RPMs on the blender itself and then having the Vitamix. I mean, the blender itself is a pretty... I feel like we're diverging down into like the design of blender jars.
Yeah, but, I know, but I get obsessed with it too because I was a little obsessed with one of those at a house that I stayed at not too long
incredible.
Ago.
I mean, in terms of making smoothies, it's and that kind of food pulverizing, it beats the socks off the old Oster.
Now, does the bike powered Vitamix, does it have a clean setting too? It'll clean itself.
No, but I hire people for that.
Yeah, right. So,
three compartment sink, you know, quick rinse. But.
Shane Tedder's here, sustainability
coordinator
for UK, and also involved in the UK Bike Week events, which are coming up.
Yeah, so we've got a great one today.
Yeah,
backed by popular demand. In partnership, and thanks to my good friend Georgia Hinkle, we're doing a tour de downtown art. And so, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, thanks in large part to the Prohibition festival event, Lexington has gotten an incredible array of public art pieces. And so we'll take a tour today starting at 6 p.m., leaving from Bowman's Den, or not Bowman's Den, but Alumni Plaza, where the big Wildcat is on Avenue of Champions, right across the Memorial Coliseum.
Okay.
So we'll leave from there, and we'll take like a 3 to 5 mile bike ride and see 8 or 9 pieces, and Georgia will kind of, Georgia's going to narrate the ride, tell us about the artist, and talk about the process that led to that particular piece. We're going to end up down in the Distillery District near Ethereal and Crank-A-Boom Ice Cream, and
just conveniently for you all.
That'll be our final destination. And so if you want to join us and plan on dinner, you know, we'd be arriving there about 7:30, and there's several places to eat down there. So that'll be a great event. And then on Saturday, first ever donut tour of Lexington has been organized by one of the Wildcat Wheels shop employees. And Going to go to four or five different Lexington bakeries and sample donuts and do a bit of comparative riding. That'll leave at 9 a.m. from the Wildcat Wheels Bike Shop. And both of those events have event pages on the Wildcat Wheels Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of fun opportunities for people who want to get out and ride their bikes, socialize while riding their bikes, and just champion the idea of, I think, one of your principal sort of cornerstones, like bike as a principal form of transportation.
Absolutely.
For getting wherever you need to go, whenever you need to go there. Would you say?
Yeah, I'm a fan. I might be a zealot, even. I might be beyond fan.
You're a little too cheerful to be a zealot. But.
And then one other thing I want to mention I'm super excited about, also backed by popular demand and announced yesterday, is, and I got to give a shout out to Parking and Transportation Services. They're occasionally maligned for doing their job.
We became better friends because of me maligning them, actually.
So
they towed my bike one time.
Yep. And we had to fix that. You know, we had that policy for a little while. But they have been the source of funding for all of the improvements relative to bike infrastructure on campus for the last several years. I mean, they've invested probably getting close to $1.5 million, $2 million over the last 5 years in campus bike infrastructure. So, I mean, the transportation side of what they're doing is awesome, and they're providing that. And one of the programs that they launched last year was this bike voucher program for faculty, staff, and students at UK. And so basically, if you are willing to not buy a parking permit for 2 years, they give you a voucher that you can use at a local bike shop to buy yourself a bike.
Brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's such a great program. A good buddy of mine, Justin Mogg, over at the University of Louisville, pioneered it 2 years before we started, so their first year was 3 years ago. The caveat is it's meant to get cars off of our campus, reduce the number of single occupancy vehicle trips. So if you've always ridden your bike, you're not in the priority tier. And so that hurts some people's feelings a little bit because they're like, man, I've been riding my bike to campus for 10 years. Why don't I get this? Mm-hmm. And that is a totally legit argument. And we are working on the incentive program for the people who've been commuting people powered for years. But the goal of this program is to reduce demand on our parking resources so that we can avoid building and additional parking lots. You know, we've got other things that are a little bit more important to build in parking lots. Not that they're not important, because some people have to drive, and I get that too. So no hate mail at us this morning. Like, some people have to drive to campus, and we're not saying that. But I think there are a big group of people who, if the infrastructure and the incentives are right, don't have to and would be willing to try something else. So the voucher program is great for that.
Spoken like a true sustainability diplomat. Shane Tedder here.
Yeah.
Shane, I'll see you around in bike-related events. And people once again, who want to find out more about UK Bike Week events.
We may see you around for some bike-related commerce this weekend. You're going to test ride one of my rigs this weekend.
I know. I'm going to try to see what it's like to ride a bike that's extra long.
The extra cycle.
Cycle with like a kiddie kind of thing on the back.
Well, looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
I think Libby Lee will love it.
I'm looking forward to it too. We'll see. Shane Tedder of UK Sustainability Coordinator. And so people, Bike Week things and everything Bike Lexington in general,
BikeLexington.com.
Yeah.
All the UK stuff it's a PTS website. I think it's Bike Week 2016 is the URL. I don't know off the top of my head, but I think we could probably figure it out pretty quickly.
All right.
Thanks, Mick.
Sure, no problem. We're going to be back after this extremely choice tune. That's something they can work on. He says he's a big fan.
I stole my bike. Yeah. That was one of the things I took off of it. I had this amazing,
off the,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's just not, that's not that's cool. That's cold. That's
like
cold-blooded.
Yeah. Stole her tires.
The tires?
Off her bike.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's not, were they gold or?
No, they were just tires.
God, man. I'm not sure that that's any easier than just going and buying.
I'm surprised I didn't get caught. How long does it take to take?
All right, so this is Trivial Thursdays, and I am your host, Mick Jeffries. Thank you for tuning in. It's you know, it's 8:33, which sounds like a silly time to say. But if you've got to be somewhere, I don't want to tell you it's 8:30. It's 8:33, so hustle. you know, he may be about to be late. I'm not sure. Sean Gannon's here. Sean, what's up, my man?
Soulful space, as per usual, when I'm here. It is tonight, 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
The Landers.
The Landers.
Headed up by
Maggie and some others.
Maggie Land. Oh, yeah. Great group of people. By the way, because it is Trivial Thursday, today's Loretta Lynn's birthday.
Is it? Oh, did we miss that? or did you mark that? And I missed it.
I'm pretty sure the first
responsibility for these things.
Tape recorder for music was invented today, or went on the market today. It was $56,000.
I feel like he's trying to school us, Nicole.
That's right.
What do you think?
It was a 2-inch tape.
Yeah.
Back
so
in the
wait.
Day.
So that might be. Did you say? So there's the videotape thing that was.
Yeah, but this was a cassette.
Man.
Recorder for music.
How about that?
Okay. Yeah.
Sean Gannon showing his trivia knowledge very mm-hmm. impressively.
Don Ho died today, Tiny Bubbles.
Oh, man.
2007.
They're really, like, if you bring up too many more things, then we're going to have to pursue them all, and we're not going to have time to talk about Soulful Space, because all
true.
Those things are of interest
That's
to me.
That's right. Well, it's
and
trivial.
I didn't know Don Ho was dead. So, as a ukulele player, this is of particular importance to
That's
me.
Right. Book him, Dano.
Different Don. But let's see. So
he was there, though.
He was there. Let's see. So what sacred space things, soulful space things have, what have been, like, I've missed the last few of them, I think, but I'm not.
Coralie and the Townies Coralie, was yeah. the last one. That was okay. the first one of the year.
Okay.
The next one on the list is the Landers.
Yeah.
I think you went to the one prior to that, which was.
Was it the Beatles?
It was the Beatles.
The Beatles made me cry.
Yeah, that was
did,
a good one.
I can't believe it, but it made me cry.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I felt like I was at some sort of happening, kind of.
That was an extraordinary evening.
It was, and I can't. I mean, I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. I went there with. This is not intended to sound derogatory, but I went there with kind of low expectations, just because I'm like, okay, some friends of mine are going to play some Beatles songs. That's cool. But it was much more than that in some way that's hard to explain, really. It was...
So much work went into the production of that particular show with the rehearsals that Lee Carroll allowed for all of those people to come to his house and rehearse for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And... They took it so seriously that, you know, like you say, the end product was an extraordinary event.
It was. The song choice, incredible. Of course, you know, Beatles songs, there are obviously lots, but you still have to pick the ones you're going to play. And then also, I think one of the key things, I may have mentioned this before too, was everybody seeming to agree to the same level of kind of sticking to the source material, if you will.
Right. They were very
nobody
respectful.
Like, yeah, nobody like oversouling it or I don't know.
Right.
You know, it's doing their own kind of, here's my take on the Beatles sort of thing.
Right.
And again, that's can be kind of hard to pull off, I think.
The Beatles music is not particularly easy
right.
to make it sound like the Beatles,
mm-hmm.
you know, and still be respectful and still be a cover band.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I think it was a really good show.
And then, as you may from our last visit, I don't think we mentioned this before, but well, when you came to talk about the Beatles thing, we talked about Lee Carroll's personal tagline, which we can't quite say on the air.
MSSOT.
My stuff starts on time.
That's correct.
We'll paraphrase. Lee, however, neglected to show up for this show. He was supposed to come in. And then, and this is the kicker, after the show, I took a friend of mine and we went to breakfast at Hannah's on Lime, and who should walk in the door but Lee Carroll. And I was like, where were you this morning?
Well, I think part of it is that if he can't start on time, what's the point in starting at all? So, you know, I'll give him credit on that
yeah.
one. So, you know, if you're not going to show up on time, don't show up.
How has the we got to get Maggie Lander on the mic here as soon as possible. But how has the evolution of Soulful Space? How has it sort of maybe gone with your expectations or defied your expectations? This is a concert series in it's a Good Shepherd, right?
It's a Good Shepherd.
Thank you. So it's a rock concert series in a church. Those two things initially don't sound like they go together.
Correct.
You guys have been doing it. Is this year two?
This is our third year.
Third year. Okay.
And I mean, yeah, it's a completely secular show. I mean, there's no bait and switch. Nobody's going to try to save you once you get there.
I think it's worth noting that, actually.
And I think some people get a little bit nervous about it being in a church and whether or not the money that they're paying for these artists is going to the church. And the money that we take in goes right back out to the artist. We try to make sure that they're paid well, they're fed well, they're entertained while they're there, and that makes it a good show for the audience. When, you know, people get a little bit upset and they get a little bit nervous about whether or not they want to come to a Soulful Space show, I try to explain it to them. It's just the same show that you'd see at Best Friend's Bar or Green Lantern or anything else. It's just in this extraordinary space. So if you want to experience that, in fact,
with the possible exception of the Fairfield Four, who almost saved me, but I'm beyond saving something.
That's true. But, you know, when you get a gospel quartet, you know what you're getting when you come in to buy the ticket. So, you know, and
irony there being that they actually play secular venues.
Oh,
and
sure.
And have a kind of more secular show for those venues.
They really do, you know. And Brian Owens does some, you know, some gospel tunes and, but I, you know, very soulful sort of thing. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's just one of those things that people get nervous about. And I understand that. I completely understand that and can relate to that.
But the series is kind of a smash hit, right?
I'm beyond my expectations. Mm-hmm. The last four shows have sold out, and you know, it just continues to get fuel and continues to grow. Corley and the Townies.
If you've got a little kid that you want to bring, you can. And if they're too short, you can put a bunch of hymnals under their bottom to prop them up.
That's right.
Not that I do that. Not that I don't.
Not that you're discouraged. But, yeah, bring your kids, you know. I mean,
the shows are over at what time?
They're typically over by 9 o'clock, 9:15.
Awesome.
I mean, you start at 7 o'clock. So by 9:15, everything's wrapping up. You can still go to dinner, go home, go to bed. Mm-hmm. You can still have time to do other things. Go to another show. I would encourage anybody to go to as many live shows in town as possible. There's so much good music in Lexington.
Indeed.
And Cora Lee and the Townies did, in my opinion, the best show I've ever seen them do, mm-hmm. the last show at Soulful Space.
Right.
She was magnificent.
Well, they got their rest because they were supposed to come in on my radio show that morning. And they didn't
And that's what they
it.
Said. They said, we're rested.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Let's quit stiffing Maggie Lander. She's over here. She's got this fantastic guitar, and she's a great singer. And
good morning.
And hi, Maggie.
How
it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
You are, like, my memory fails, apparently. I feel like I could never forget you performing on my show before, and I've got pictures to prove it, but we differ somewhat on location.
Right.
And like last time you were here.
The last time I was here was the late summer or early fall, something like that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the student center. And so this is, I like your new digs here.
If you say so, I swear you performed in the studio.
Dude,
but
no, the room looks so similar, but I swear it was not this building.
We have inked it up pretty good in here, so yeah.
Yeah.
You just can't.
All
you
the
can't
little
let,
monsters on the wall are great.
You can't let RFL DJs have Sharpies. You just can't do it.
Can I graffiti after we're done here?
So how have you been, my dear?
I've been great. I've been busy. We're so excited, my band, The Landers, about playing Soulful Space tonight.
Is your band also your family, or are you just
we're
called
not,
The Landers?
We're not, no.
Okay. Landers just works
we're
as
not,
a good
we're
band
not
name.
Related. We, okay. we're family, of course, as a band is, in a sense. But it's been a real treat, actually, being able to lead a band, to play stuff that I've written. And mm-hmm. we do some covers, of course, you know, with Dan Trisco plays guitar, Scott Stess on bass, Dwight Dunlap on drums. They have such a a catalog in their mind of music over the years that they've played or that they've loved that they can just, you know, pull stuff out of their hat, mm-hmm. really cool covers and ideas and references. And it's been really great working with them.
Right. Those guys, I mean, Dan, of course, was in one of Lexington's sort
of... Yeah, Dan
of,
and Scott.
Or Scott, too, right,
yeah.
in Velvet Elvis, which mm-hmm. was... one of Lexington has a kind of strange, rarefied ability to produce artists who ascend to a certain height and then become star-crossed somehow by some sort of label deal gone wrong.
Yeah,
and Velvet Elvis kind of did that too.
Gosh, they toured with UB40 and played arenas, and just like it's so cool that guys that have gotten to that level are like, yeah, we'll play with this kid, uh-huh. I'm like. From
Pretty
a
neat.
Farm, that's awesome,
Yeah. So, so these folks are, they're playing your songs,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, some covers too.
Yeah.
How do you go about, sharing your songs with other musicians? How much do you need or want them to play in a certain kind of way?
Usually I'll write something and have it completely or almost finished. It might mm-hmm. miss a bridge, it might miss blah, blah, and I'll kind of share it with them, go, does anybody hear anything? Because I'm not gonna say, here's exactly how it needs to be. Occasionally that will happen if there's a very direct vision in my head. But usually it's like, what are you hearing instrumentation-wise for the band, drum approach? They come up with stuff that I would not think of that changes the whole chemistry of the song.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually like just handing them, here you go, guys. Here's a sandwich. Have at,
uh-huh.
So
now, do you do that in the form of like performing it for them on acoustic guitar, or like giving them a demo and saying like, here's
usually
here's
if I make a demo, I'll get on the laptop and GarageBand for like 2 hours and zone out and make a demo with drums and play a little quasi-bass on it and piano and just be like, here's the direction I'm thinking. If it's brand new or I'm just floundering on it and I can't seem to find a direction, I'll just, at rehearsal, I'll go, okay, everybody sit down, listen.
Right.
Help me here, But most of the time I know pretty much what I want, but...
Let's hear what it sounds like in acoustic form.
Okay.
Maggie Lander's here with an acoustic guitar, playing left-handed, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, left-handed.
And with the strings in the traditional order, not just like flipped up.
Yeah, this isn't actually a left-handed guitar.
Yeah.
it took me, 12 years to finally get an actual left-handed guitar.
All right.
Yeah.
And so the Landers are playing tonight. This is a little preview of what that's going to sound like. We've got 15 minutes left in the show, and I'm determined to squeeze in two songs by you.
Okay.
So this is Maggie Lander, and... this is Trivial Thursday, so we'll give Maggie the floor, and I'm going to move some mics around and sort of do our impromptu thing. We'll be back.
Write you a book, I'll keep your letters. Anything it takes to make you feel better. Write your own ticket, make your own way. That's what they tell me, that's what they say. And with every other night, your story fades into mine. I keep seeing your outline, though I try. And I try, and I don't know what I would say if I never heard your name. Hold my face in your hand today. The world, let me in.
jar of fireflies, glowing bright and stopping time like that.
Maggie Lander live in the studio here. Wonderful, Maggie.
Thank you.
What's it like how's it changed for you to, like, I don't know, write songs for yourself and for acoustic guitar versus performing them, you know, with a band? Is it different?
It's been helpful having a band to actually write for.
Mm-hmm.
You think about things differently. You think about rhythmic opportunities. You think about it's been very positive for me to be. I have something to write for, to be, mm-hmm, like, now I can be like, hey, you know, I have a receptive platform to be like, hey guys, look, I wrote something, instead of just writing a heartbreak song and then sitting in your apartment and just being like, well, that's done, and then you know you go play it solo to people who may or may not listen, you know. When you have a drum kit and electric guitar behind you, it's a good feeling.
Well, and speaking of solo, I mean, you also, like, I mean, like, in some cases, leaving spaces for solos for some of, like, those great musicians you have.
Oh,
you're like,
yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Wait a minute. Let's,
yeah, and
you do a solo here.
Right, and it takes it to a whole nother level. I mean, there's songs that, one song especially that we play, called Neon and Amber, that I wrote. It originally started out, I made a demo of it again in good old GarageBand, and it was really dreamy and dark and weird. And then I introduced it to the band, and Dan was like, no, we need to speed this up. We need to rock it up a little bit. And it turned into kind of a smoldering jam,
mm-hmm,
weird, jazzy, kind of like, kind of heavy, just makes you want to kind of vibe out, you know?
Yeah.
So it definitely changes.
Maggie Lander's here. You're performing tonight at Soulful Space.
Yep.
And that starts at 7, is that right, Sean?
7 p.m.
Doors open at 6.
Yeah, okay. We're gonna do some news here real quick from the University of Kentucky Journalism Department, and then we're going to come back and close out, Maggie, with you doing another song,
okay,
if that's cool.
Awesome.
Does that sound good? Okay. So we'll take a break here and do some news with the UK Journalism Department. So take it away. This is Mick. Trivial Thursday is here. We've just got a couple minutes left. I'm here with Sean Gannon of Soulful Space and Maggie Lander, who I'm delighted to have in the studio performing. And let's see, we are just dedicating the last minutes of our show to Maggie. You've got a new single out, by the way.
We do. It's called Easier to Lie, and it is on the iTunes and Spotify, Amazon, and it's the first of 4 singles that we're releasing every month or so.
Fantastic.
The second single,
which I can announce here, nobody knows, will be Whiskey, and that will be out in early June.
Fantastic. Well, I think you can expect to hear a lot of those on RFL. So
wonderful. Thank you.
And maybe, so you're going to play one more song for us. We've got just
I'll
enough time
the
for
single,
that.
Easier to Lie.
Okay. This is Maggie Lander. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Trivial Thursdays. We'll go out with Maggie, and Democracy Now is right around the corner. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us,
Maggie. Maggie down at Soulful Space tonight at 7.
Without you.